You want me to say my name? Sister Maureen Martin. My ministry right now is something new to me and new to the church. It's called Faith Alive in the Family. It's a ministry of helping parents be the first teachers of the faith and preparing parishioners to go into homes of young parents, 2 and 3 and 4 year olds, to help them find ways to be conscious of talking about God and working with Him in the family. So it's a beautiful ministry, and we're working hard to get it off the ground in many other places right now. The idea of my relationship with Clelia, it's an interesting question. And when I look back on my life, I thought at first, I was thinking, well, when I entered, I had no relationship with Clelia because we didn't know who she was. We didn't talk about her and we weren't taught about her. But then this evening of prayers, I was thinking about that and I said, wait a minute, I did know Clelia. I knew her spirit as soon as I walked in the first time to meet the sisters, and their warmth and the welcoming that they gave me. And I knew her in their enthusiasm and zeal and joy. And I knew her in the steadfastness of Sister Anita Marie, who persevered through all kinds of financial difficulties and setbacks when she was building the new Chiesa, what was the new then, the new Chiesa. So that's what I knew about her. So when we started to learn about her, I guess it was, it wasn't immediate recognition of what I had already experienced, because what we first heard about her was the audio tape. And you know, it was not all factual. Some of it sounded kind of magical almost, but it also impressed me that she was, you know, the negativity or darkness of the suffering in her life, not so much her negativity, but just suffering. And it seemed to me sometimes that she was kind of passive in just accepting all these things. And so that was something that I didn't quite understand as well. But then, what helped me to get to know her personally was, I think, the publishing of Mother and Teacher made a big impact on me. That was the time we were trying to do a lot of things to talk about Clelia and to start to study what she wrote. And in that book, especially in the footnotes, I found Mother Clelia. I found her deep love of God. I found her... The thing that always strikes me is how honest she is with herself and how she never stops looking within herself to see where she is with her relationship with God and what might be blocking that. Her focus on Christ, no matter what happened, that was the source of her steadfastness. So those things became very important to me. And also, I remember at that time realizing her spousal love for Jesus and how strong that was in her life and how that started to impact my life the more I thought about that. So as I grew and went through my own experiences and so forth, continued to pray with her and to read more, I know I began to understand and appreciate her differently. The spousal love relationship remained a strong inspiration for me, I think, something that I also desired. Her awesome humility, you know, things in my own life that were humbling and things that, you know, where there were failures or where there was a lack of understanding or success, whatever, and you have to do something with these experiences. So you either become bitter and angry or you become more accepting, and that takes huge humility. And she was certainly a model of that, almost a frightening model of that for me. Her steadfastness, but you know, I love her perseverance and her charism. She knew who she was. She knew what God was asking of her. She would let nothing stand in the way, although she was humble and docile in many ways. You know how she stood up for the title of the Apostle of the Sacred Heart. She wouldn't move away from devotion to the Sacred Heart in our congregation. So that clear perseverance and self-awareness of God's grace in her life was and is impressive for me. Recently, her letters, we just got book 10. There's something there that made me smile and reminded me of the joy. And plus the positio, many people in there talk about how she maintained her joy. That's something I also did experience very early from the sisters that expressed her personality. But in one of her letters, she is talking to a superior and she sends the superior this message that, remember, I put you there to make your sisters happy. I thought, wow, that's not always the message that we used to get about superiors in the old days, you know, but it's really something that's a beautiful message, and it shows her heart. So that, you know, that again draws me to her. So that and the joy of that she expressed so often. So I think those are the things that impress me now. When I look at my own ministry now, I think I share in her love for children and for young people and for the responsibility of mothers and fathers. I think what I feel about this ministry right now is that it's a means to help heal the church, to bring people, young people who are either alienated or just disassociated from the church, back into the church. And I think it's as education becomes more difficult in our schools, this is thinking out of the box. It's a way for the church to reach out to its people, and I think it's very important. So that zeal in fostering love in the church that I know she had, I think, is shared in this ministry. Her desire to heal those alienated from the church. I love her ability to take risks. She didn't let anything stop her. She didn't care if it wasn't going to work. And I think that's part of what's my experience in this ministry. And I guess I'm seeing more, a lot of priests, and they're being impressed by their faith and their strength at this time in the church. And so I think that I'm beginning to really connect more with her love and concern for priests and her appreciation for their strong faith and their own vocation that they have to represent. So that's my story.
We can open up for questions if anyone has any questions or anything they would like Sister Maureen to speak a little bit more on.
Because I was under 10 minutes. You could remove your mute buttons.
Okay, no question? Okay, then we will move on to Sister Bridget, and then we can also ask questions at the end if you think of something or a topic that you would like to discuss a little further.
Okay, so you know I'm Sister Bridget Smith. I am the kindergarten teacher at Sacred Heart Villa in St. Louis. I'm also the coordinator in the St. Louis area for GFAS. My experience with Mother Clelia reminds me a lot of initially what Sister Maureen said, that in high school I didn't know her. I never had heard of her. I heard her name spoken the first time about 2 months before I entered the convent, when I was at one of my girlfriend's house. And her mother had been educated by the apostles and had grown up on the hill, and so her mother wanted to know how an Irish girl could enter an Italian community. And I began to tell her, well, you know, there are sisters like Sister Maureen Martin, that she's not Italian. Sister John Martin we had in school, she was not at all Italian. So I convinced her mother that the apostles accepted people who were not Italian, and that I would come to know about this Mother Clelia when I entered the community. And in the postulate, we quickly learned about her, and I began to find myself referring to her as not just Mother Clelia, but almost like a spiritual mother for me. So soon after entering, I really looked to Clelia as a spiritual guide. I made a promise with her that each day of recollection and every retreat, I would take her words with me. So every day of recollection, I do like a little roulette with whatever book I'm reading at the time. It might be one of her letters. It might be, for a long time, it was the Mother and Teacher book, because we had that had, as Sister Maureen said, great footnotes with wonderful translations of her diary and her letters. But I would take those words, and every single time She didn't fail. She gave me what I needed to hear that month. And many times they were zingers. They were challenging. Sometimes it was things to challenge me that I wanted to skirt around, but I needed to face. So for many years, she was like my spiritual director. I looked at her to give me that encouragement that I needed and to keep my feet on the right path. As time went on, I began to share who she was more so. And, you know, it's often been said that you learn by teaching others. So when I was given opportunities to talk about our charism, doing some vocation work with youth here in the Diocese of St. Louis, I had to really wrap my head around, how am I going to tell about our charism? How am I going to share her story, especially because her story is so challenging? I found myself oftentimes not sharing all the details about the exile, not sharing the struggle and the conflict with the sisters, because for many years I felt like that was our own, if you want to say garbage. I hate to say it, but it really was our community garbage. And I did not want that to be shared with others. I was embarrassed by it, but I would focus on more so the good things she did in her life. And I would share and explain to people what charism was, giving examples. But then as time went on, I began to realize that I needed to share some of the reality of her life with others. And as I began to share that reality with others, I began to realize the children that I was teaching were making connections. Like the little first grade boy in the Bronx one year, when I'm trying to read the coloring book out loud to them and explain about Mother Clelia to them, one of the boys said, oh, I know what it means when they said her father was very busy and not home a lot. And I looked at this little boy and I said, well, her father was busy, was a businessman. He went, no, Sister Bridget. It means when he's that busy, he has another woman on the side. This was a first grader saying this to me. And I began to realize, I can't sugarcoat her story. I've got to, in an age-appropriate way, explain it to the children. And so I began to think, all right, what am I going to do about this? So I began to tell about more so about her struggle and her mother's death and her father's infidelity. And the children, much to my surprise, were really able to relate to that. I had a little boy in my classroom this year, a kindergartner. When I talked about her early childhood to them, he looked at me and he was really upset, has been holding a lot of anger and showing a lot of anger for the past year because his parents divorced, then his mother remarried, has a child from the second husband now, and this boy is just carrying a lot with him right now. But when I talked about her childhood and what it would have been like, he looked at me and he said, she was from a broken home. I said, yes, she was. She was still able to become a saint, even though she came from a broken home? And I said, yes, she still became a saint. And he raised his hands in the air and he said, there's hope for me. There's hope for me. I too can become a saint. Wow. I was speechless when he said that. And again, I realized age appropriate, the kindergartners could understand that because I have had children in my class who have been from broken homes, who have experienced the infidelity of a parent, maybe not understanding it all the way, but he made that connection and feels so connected to her now and feels that he can become a saint now. His life isn't perfect, but that doesn't mean he can't try. So as time has gone on, I've also been able to share more of her life experience through GFASC. Same thing happened. When I first started working with GFASC, I did not want to go into the stories about the exile. I did not want to share that information. But then, God bless Sister Marta, she was sending us these GFASC reflections that talked about the exile, that talked about the turmoil and all of the community problems. And I realized I couldn't shelter that. I couldn't avoid it. And in not avoiding it, especially in the last 2 or 3 years, I realized how much deeper I understood her life more, how much more I could understand her suffering. And the people in GFASC had already read about it because we shared the biographies with them. But I began to realize as I share her struggle and suffering, it took on for me a deeper level. I began to realize she was truly that grain of wheat that died. Had she not died again and again and again over false accusations, over people telling lies about her, over the church telling her she was not fit to be superior general, on and on. Had she not done those multiple deaths, our institution would not be where it is right now. We would not be celebrating up to our 125th anniversary right now. I could also think that here at the Villa, it is my privilege that I get to put on a performance on every March about Mother Clelia. You've probably seen the pictures of the little girls dressed in their little nun outfits, and I can't take credit for those. Those were all here for me when I arrived. They were done by our sisters who were resilient. And we looked at that, the first scripts that were left by the sisters from Brazil, and we decided, what can we do to improve the story? And so for those children, I always focus for the young children, because we're talking 2 and 3 year olds here and 4 year olds. We keep her story simple. We talk about her childhood, about her vocation call, about her desire to start the congregation, starting the congregation, and then sending sisters as missionaries. Sharing the love of the heart of Christ is our big focus for there. But 2 years ago, I put a new spin on it. And we changed it up by adding a new, almost like refrain that goes through it. Even when things did not go her way, I'll trust in God alone, is what she'd pray. The whole performance now is rhymed. One of our teachers helped me with doing that. And we point out that she had struggles throughout her life now. We don't name the infidelity of her father. We don't name all the struggles, but we give them a sense that her life wasn't easy. The simplest way, the easiest way that I could try to explain it to children of that age. My experience in Rome in November was incredible, because for me, I felt as if Clelia were saying to me, Bridget, I am your mother. I am your spiritual mother. So that was such a blessing. Again, the idea that she was sacrificial for our community, seeing those grains of wheat all over her urn, was amazing. And lastly, I was so much touched by people in the States at GFASC and people that were meeting in Rome that I didn't even know, who kept on referring to Clelia as our Clelia, our Mother Clelia. That she's just not mine anymore, just not the apostles. She belongs to the Universal Church. And that was so eye-opening.
Thank you, Sister Bridget. Does anyone have any further questions or comments for Sister Bridget? Sister Catherine.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay, good. So I'm Sister Catherine Broderson, and I am currently at Coriezu Academy in St. Louis, Missouri, and I am teaching theology to seniors and sophomores. At least I do my best to teach theology to seniors and sophomores. So as I was thinking about this, I was like, oh my goodness, I just professed vows in August. And there have been sisters who have been studying Clelia and living this life for decades. And so I was kind of comforted when one of the sisters I live with, who has over 35 years profession, came up and said, you know, don't sweat it, because I'm still trying to figure out what it means to be a daughter of Clelia, and I'm still trying to learn the charism, and I'm still trying to learn what it means to look to her as my mother. And I was like, okay, all right, this is about progress, not perfection. And I think that what has already been said about Mother Clelia is one of the things that spoke to me initially. My relationship with Mother Clelia started when I was a discerning woman, and I was, you know, given some literature about Clelia as I was beginning to speak with the apostles, and I took that home with me, and I started reading it, and as I read through the pages of her life, it was like I was encountering somebody I already knew. She just resonated with me. Like, it was like I recognized this person that I'm reading about. And when I would get to, I didn't have her letters, but when I would get to like little things that, like little quotes that were inserted in the books that I had, sometimes it felt like she just pulled those out of my own prayer journal. And so that really spoke to me. And two things in particular really spoke to me when I was initially discerning and learning about Mother Clelia, and it was that brokenness that, you know, Sister Bridget just spoke so eloquently about, that idea of, you know, she had a lot of brokenness and messiness in her life, and she just kept getting up and putting her trust in God. In the midst of failure, in the midst of heartache, in the midst of injustice, she never stopped trusting that God could bring amazing things out of that, even if she couldn't see the way. And I could relate to that in my own faith journey. You know, I didn't enter the convent right out of college. I didn't, you know, I had my own, you know, roundabout way of getting here. And so to learn about the foundress of this community I was starting to get to know had her own bumps and bruises along the way. I took a lot of consolation in that, and a lot of comfort in that, and a lot of comfort in the way that God continued to work through the failings of so many people that she was surrounded by. And one of the other things that really just resonated with me when I was first learning about her and discerning was I kept coming across these little like quotes of hers and like little expressions of hers that basically emphasize this point of you have to be before you can do. You have to be before you can do. You have to be in love with the heart of Christ before you can share the love of the heart of Christ. And that coming across those quotes was kind of, at least for me, that I think kind of the deal breaker when it came to my vocational discernment. I was really on the fence of like, I love my ministry. I love what I'm doing. I love my job. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, really making a difference in the church. Like, how could I leave this to enter the convent? And Mother Clelia had the answer for me. It's because that restlessness I felt in me is because I wasn't satisfied enough by just doing and just having a ministry. I wanted to be, and I wanted to be more, and I wanted to be the spouse of Christ, and I wanted to be someone who knew the love of the heart of Christ in such a way that anybody who encountered you could experience that love too. And so the more time I spent with Clelia, the more I was like, okay, I gotta take this jump. I really want to be before I do. And I've been focused on doing for so long. I'm going to jump and try to be first. And so that was kind of my first kind of real experience of a relationship with Mother Clelia. And I would say at that point, she was someone that I was recognizing. And I was like, I'm familiar with you. I get you. I resonate with you. And it wasn't until last year in the canonical novitiate that I think my relationship with Mother Clelia really took a turn from I get you and you get me, I recognize you, to wow, she really truly is a mother to me. And I really feel like her daughter. And the way that unfolded for me was we had this great exercise in the canonical novitiate of reading the letters of Mother Clelia and then writing letters in response to her. And then reading more letters, which always happened to respond to what we had just written too. Often with the head washing that we needed. But as we went through that exercise, I was amazed. Like the Holy Spirit was undoubtedly present in that process, because I was amazed at the things that came out of the end of my pen when I was writing to Mother Clelia, and I addressed each one as dear mother, and the honesty, honesty from why am I talking about this to her to, oh my gosh, I think I just yelled at her because I'm frustrated. Like the relationship changed to a family relationship. Like I'm that brutally honest with my family, and I would snap at my sister like that. Like my sister's sister, not my sisters. I try not to snap them. Anyways, you get what I'm saying, but that brutal honesty that was coming out, and even the frustrations and the deepest desires and hopes for the future. I was amazed at how easy it was for me to open up that part of myself to her. And I think for me, that's when the relationship really changed to more of that mother-daughter experience. And then of course it was confirmed as I would, you know, write those letters and look over them and then go to our next set of letters to read, and she always had some response that seemed to speak to exactly what it was that I was struggling with, or exactly what it was that I needed to hear, or the kick in the butt that I needed at that particular moment, or even times, moments of consolation, you know, getting to the letter where she says, you know, I know my daughters better than anybody else. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And she's like, I know their struggles. I know all of that. And to just feel known by her was very, it's a very profound experience. And I'm still kind of processing all that now as a first year junior. This is my first year in full-time ministry as a junior at CJ. Now at Cor Jesu, I think the first things that kind of come to mind with regard to charism and the spirit of Mother Clelia is how much service they do, and how, you know, the girls really make spirituality and faith and service a part of their experience at Cor Jesu. And I was thinking about that and I was like, yeah, but there's something more there that I'm experiencing. And I think when I think of the charism of Mother Clelia, I think of it as she has always been a healing presence in the midst of brokenness, woundedness, anger, frustration. She has always been that healing balm, that presence of mercy and forgiveness and unconditional love. And just yesterday, I had this experience with a student who came to talk to me during her study, and she had all kinds of questions. The first was, why can't women be priests? And then she started to go into these questions she had about the LGBTQ community. And you could see her struggling with trying to understand the culture that she was immersed in. And at one point she said, you know, my dad tells me that, you know, all these people, they're just sinners, and that it's just a horrible thing. And she goes, but what I see are people striving for a relationship, and they're wounded and they're hurt and they're struggling. And how can we as a church respond to their need for a relationship? And I was just blown away. I was like, that is the charism. That, and I can only hope that her experience at Cor Jesu has helped lead this young woman to that more compassionate, open response of, okay, there's woundedness here. How do I respond to the woundedness instead of just writing people off or giving up? And so for me, it was just yesterday, it was such a profound experience of, this is why we do what we do. There's the everyday messiness of papers have to get graded, you know, all this kind of stuff. But then there's those breakthrough moments of like, yeah, this is why we're apostles. And this is the hope that I have for the young people that I work with, that they will go out as young adults in the church and create an environment of dialogue, of healing, of forgiveness, of relationship and fellowship for everyone. So that's just kind of all over the place, but that's been my experience lately and kind of my growth with Mother Clelia.
Thank you, Sister Catherine. Does anyone have any questions or comments, thoughts for Sister Catherine? Okay. Well, my name is Sister Angela Gritzma, and I'm serving in vocation ministry. When I was praying about this theme of Mother Clelia and her daughters, of course, it brought me back to my initial call as an apostle of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. I met the sisters on November 20th, 1999 at National Catholic Youth Conference. And the next day, the 21st, I talked to the sisters and I had shared that I might feel called to religious life. And I had a lot of questions which seemed so important at the time, but they were really absolutely not important at all when I look back on it. Sisters had invited me to visit Koryuzu Academy. And so I went to Koryuzu on March 10th, 2000. I thought it was so interesting because every time I met the sisters, they were talking about Mother Clelia. What I didn't realize was when I had talked to them on November 21st, it was Mother Clelia, the anniversary of Mother Clelia's death. And so the sisters were getting together that evening, and so the sisters were talking about it. And when I went to Koryuzu Academy, Sister Sheila was the principal at the time, and she got up and she talked to all the girls about Mother Clelia. And I thought to myself, this is, must be all these sisters talk about. But as it turns out, it was Mother Clelia's birthday. So, you know, both of these days were significant. And then now, November 20th, which was the first day that I saw the apostles, is actually her feast day. I was immediately drawn to Mother Clelia, and it was pretty much through her literature. I read Mother and Teacher, and I was just really struck by her profound interior life. I was struck by her honesty. She talked so often of reparation. I had no idea what reparation was, but there was something about that word that spoke to me and drew me. I immediately connected to her in a deep way that I could not put words to. But like all the sisters had said, I was finding in this woman a mother. I mean, she offered a lot of affirmations. She offered a lot of challenges. Like, I love the head washing one too. And when she keeps calling the sister the rascal, you know, it's playful, but it's sincere. There was just something about her that drew me, and I wanted to be her daughter, and that was all I wanted. I wanted to be in this congregation. I was struck by her docility to the Holy Spirit. She writes often of praying to the Holy Spirit, her love for the Eucharist. She talks about the importance of making these short visits. She says it doesn't matter how long they are, just as long as you make them. And I know that that practice has become really important to me as well. Even so much that I will rearrange how I'm walking somewhere so that I pass by a chapel just so I can make a 10-second visit just to keep that Eucharistic spirit alive in my own heart. Mother Clelia was a woman of the church, and that's extremely striking because she was so faithful to a church that was hurting her, where she was experiencing a lot of her sufferings were coming from members of the church. And that didn't faze her because her vision of the church was so much bigger than the people she was encountering. Her vision of the church was very deep and very big, and she was completely faithful. When you even think about her love for the priesthood, I think Sister Maureen had been talking about that. She she wasn't scandalized by scandal at all. And I think that that spoke to me at a young age, and it continues to speak to me because she understood the significance of holiness and what holiness really looks like. And even when she said we need candidates who are robust in virtue, not pious statues, she knew that if you're going to be robust, anybody who's an athlete knows that to get strong, you have to do a lot of work. And she felt that way about the call to holiness and virtue. And as a young person, I just loved that challenge. And I also loved her saying, God alone, God alone. It just was so striking. And that's what I wanted. As a senior in high school, we had to do a very large project on a saint. And it was a big part of our grade. And I chose to do Mother Clelia. And I researched every person she ever came in touch with that had become a saint or you know, blessed or whatever. I studied all the places where she traveled. And then I turned in the project, and at the end of the year, I was called to the teacher's classroom, and the teacher said, I don't know what to do. I don't really know if I can pass you, because this project was supposed to be on a saint, and you chose a woman who is not a saint. Mother Clelia Maloney is not a saint. And I remember as a senior, I was just so indignant, and I just looked at her and said, not yet. And the teacher, she just smiled and said, okay, I'll accept the project, because obviously this is a woman of holiness. And at that point, her cause had begun. But I couldn't stop thinking about Mother Clelia. Even when I went to college, I went on a retreat. And I guess the person who was speaking didn't show up. It was called a Saints Retreat. And so I asked the Father Meinrad, who's a Benedictine monk, oh, can I just talk to the group about Mother Clelia? And he said, well, no, the person who's supposed to speak is not here, so you might as well. Well, the whole retreat became a Mother Clelia retreat, and they would do skits, and Mother Clelia had to be in every skit. I mean, there were skits with Bill Clinton, the Ice Capades, and Mother Clelia. I mean, like, you had to figure out who all the characters were. And it was just, she was just always such a draw for me. And when I entered the community, I just would read her words and just pray to her, because our charism is embodied by this woman and the way she thinks and the way she approaches life, which is so, it's absolutely radical and nonsensical and even foolish. You could even say it's totally foolish, that I feel like she shows what faith really can look like. And she calls us to a higher standard. Through my time in formation and also in ministry, I had a similar experience that Sister Bridget mentioned with the families in GFASC, because they took to her immediately. And then when I would teach, the kids took to her immediately. And I kind of got a little bit offended. It was kind of like, you know, this is our Mother Clelia, and not everybody, you know, everybody has so much to say about her. And what was happening was I was gaining insights from the people, and it was absolutely powerful. I had the opportunity to live in Rome for a year, and what was absolutely amazing is that you could be in the room with several sisters and nobody speaks the same language, but the spirit was the exact same, and it was like you knew each other, kind of like Sister Catherine said. When I read Mother Clelia, it was like reading somebody I knew. When I met another apostle, it was like meeting somebody I already knew, because I knew we were both daughters of Clelia, and that was extremely powerful. When the new books came out, like A Grain of Wheat, basically the mounts just went crazy. It was amazing. You would walk down the hall and somebody would say, did you read the chapter on this? You know, people will be upset. Can we talk about this? And then somebody else would come by and we'd get real quiet, because nobody wanted to ruin anything for another person in case they hadn't read that chapter yet. But even in chapel, I remember I was in chapel and Sister Estelle was like, ooh, go to page 68. And it was just like, you know, everybody was flipping and just really interested in all these different pieces that we did not know about her life. And it just magnifies her great example of holiness. again, in my ministry, I have a lot of opportunities to speak to young people and in different situations. And again, that whole idea of Mother Clelia not being ours anymore is very clear to me. She's been featured in Magnificat magazine, and I can't tell you the number of people who come up and say, Apostles of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, I read about her, Mother Clelia, on Ash Wednesday. And I know the people are just so drawn to her. We just had the Mass at the Mass in St. Louis over the weekend, and it was really interesting because my dad said to me, this congregation should not be in existence. When I heard this woman's story, all I could thinking was, these sisters should not be here. I just looked around this church filled with people and all of these sisters, and I kept thinking, this does not make sense. Her life does not make sense. And it's back to being the grain of wheat. God had given her a mission and she accepted it wholeheartedly. And in vocation ministry, I work with a lot of young people who are ready to give themselves to a great ideal. And a lot of young people are drawn to Mother Clelia because she offers something that is worth giving your life for. And that's the call to be a saint. So that's what I have. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions or comments for the whole group? Sister Maureen? You're muted. Okay, just a second.
I'm unmuted now. Okay. I was very impressed with everyone's sharing. Sister Bridget's talk on the spiritual motherhood was something that became a thread for this talk, right? And Catherine's... I'm struck by your talking about your response to Clelia and how real you became in your writing to her. And it reminded me of how many times I think she reacted that way in her own life. Because there are stories, we heard almost oral history though of her sharpness sometimes, but how she would also, of course, apologize. But that's a way that I see her, I think. And I think it says something else about our life and community and our promise of community that we always strive for, that realness with one another. We don't want to stab each other, no, but the realness and honesty of our trust in one another and love. And then when you were talking about what was missing, the word that came to me was just love, you know, and you did mention that. And it's, I think that's the strongest aspect of her charism, huh? I love the restlessness that was looking for something. I was wondering, Allison, you're on here, and when we were talking about all of the struggles and the failure and the, you know, all the terrible things that happened, and how did you respond to that? Because you probably heard more of it before you entered, and you're hearing it now from these sisters. How do you react to that?
Honestly, for me, it amazes me how she reacted. I mean, Sister Marianne and I have been, we went through like a grain of wheat together, and I would read something and then I'd get kind of upset about it. I'd be like, how could they do that to her? Like, and I'd be judging whoever it was that wronged her, but that wasn't her reaction at all. And like, here's me, like, hundreds of years later getting upset about this, and it didn't even happen to me. And she didn't get upset at all, and she was the one who it all happened to. But it just it amazes me how she was so generous with her forgiveness and just wanted to love everyone no matter what they did to her. And she's just such a strong example of humility and being a grain of wheat.
Thank you. Yeah, because I just read that tonight too, in the positios, how one of the sisters that know her admitted that she felt great anguish over these things. It wasn't like she wasn't hurt by them. Mm-hmm. But all the more, her her ability to rise above it, you know, to trust in God more than in human relationships and whatever happens.
Does anyone else have any questions or comments? Okay. Well, a special thank you, Sister Maureen, Sister Bridget, and Sister Catherine, for joining us this evening.